it is indeed unprecedented to have three high-level meetings on health topics around a UN General Assembly. I think a couple of things are really important to note. So we have a meeting on universal health coverage, a meeting on tuberculosis, and then a meeting on pandemic prevention, preparedness, and response. The first two, the ones on UHC and tuberculosis, are part of the accountability of member states. They're reporting back on progress that they've made on these two topics following previous high-level meetings. The value of having a high-level meeting and then reporting back is that, you know, there are targets, there's accountability, it holds people's feet to the fire, you know, in terms of progress that they've made or challenges that they've had. And in the case of UHC and tuberculosis, they were outcome documents and targets from the meetings that were held previously that countries are reporting on. The PPR one, the pandemic preparedness, prevention, and response one, is really, really important because it was 129 member states that came together last year to ask for this meeting to take place. I think because there was a will to and a collective agreement that we needed to do better and to do more to respond to threats like COVID-19, and hence the meeting on PPR.
There's a global process that nations belonging to the World Health Organization have agreed to, happening right now, but already there's misinformation and discord surrounding it. Why is it so important to put the mistakes made during the pandemic right, and how important is the meeting this month to the whole process?
What I had hoped would happen with this resolution in New York was that while the processes in Geneva would be quite technically focused on the issues of what's required to respond to pandemics and what needs to be in place, what are the regulations that need to be there for countries to be able to respond quickly and appropriately, was that the meeting here in New York and the resolution coming out of that would really set the bar. Set the guardrails, set the bar for highest level political leadership, which we saw during COVID was really, really necessary, essential. Secondly, the issue of equity. We see even today that equity in the COVID response is far from ideal. You know, we still have millions of people in the developing world who are not fully vaccinated. Meanwhile, you've got surpluses of vaccines in high-income countries. And it's not surprising that those countries have done better in terms of economic recovery than lower-income countries who now find themselves in debt distress. So I think equity is another issue which really needs to be put on the table very concretely in the resolution that's going to be put forward by or agreed in the meeting in September on PPR. The other thing that I think is really, really something that is very necessary is agreeing what pandemic preparedness looks like. And that's a whole of government, whole of society response. You need to tackle misinformation, disinformation. You need to have the systems in place. You need to address, you know, impact on education. You need to look at different sectors. And how do we prepare? How do we prepare better? And I'm afraid that we're not going to get what we need out of that. And I think so the whole notion of preparedness is critical. But more fundamentally, I think what this meeting needs to do is to rebuild the trust that is being eroded by misinformation and disinformation, the trust that's being eroded by inequity. And it's a way to rebuild trust, I think, and to really demonstrate the global solidarity that was not there during COVID. And that's what I hope comes out of this, the outcome document. Now, equity is mentioned many times in the draft outcome document. What will be critical is what is in the call to action. What is the accountability of member states? And I'm still hoping that heads of state will want to have a very high level of accountability and demonstrate strong political leadership so that an epidemic and pandemic like COVID does not happen again.
In a recent op-ed, you discussed how a confluence of rising temperatures, deforestation, urbanization, and other climate-related issues are increasing our pandemic risk. How are the climate crisis and pandemics related?
So climate, environment, and pandemics are inextricably linked. Warming temperatures, deforestation, urbanization are changing natural environments. They're shrinking wildlife habitats, increasing the likelihood that humans will come into contact with animals more closely. And that contact can result in what we call the spillover of zoonotic diseases that can become pandemics. And we've seen this before. Ebola, SARS, MERS, COVID-19, all of these are about human-wildlife interaction. So, and it is very likely, the experts say, that the next pandemic will result from such a zoonotic spillover. At the same time, the climate crisis and the acceleration and the severity, like the deepening severity of climate events, is also stressing health systems. Just imagine the stress on health systems from 3 years of COVID. Health systems are on their knees. And then you have, for example, the kinds of flooding we saw in Pakistan last year. One third of your health system underwater. So how are we going to contend with that? And I think looking at how we make health systems more climate resilient is really, really critical for pandemic responses and is part of pandemic preparedness in my mind. So climate is also changing disease patterns. So for example, diseases that were once endemic to specific regions are showing up in other regions. So example, West Nile virus cropping up in the US. Other mosquito-borne diseases like dengue, malaria, chikungunya on the rise in Europe. So I think there's a real, there's a stress on health systems, which is also very real, the physical health systems, but also the changing patterns of disease, which we will need to contend with the climate emergency that we find ourselves in.
Now, is there a reason why the meetings on pandemic prevention, preparedness, and response are being held now? Have there been any similar efforts made in response to other global health emergencies?
Well, I think we have a really good precedent. So having worked on HIV now for several decades, I can remember a time when the world came together in this very building in the United Nations to have the first high-level meeting on a pandemic, and that was on HIV in 2001. It galvanized a tremendous response from political leaders all over the world, resulted in increasing financing, increasing action across countries, amazing solidarity to respond to what was the worst pandemic the world had seen at the time. So there is a tradition in this building. This is why I'm still hopeful about what's going to come out of the meeting on PPR, and I hope that PPR, UHC, and TB are all sort of lifted by that, by that history and that hope. It set the benchmark, really, in terms of making commitments, having targets, reporting back, being accountable, engaging civil society. So I think there is a history.
Mm-hmm. And drawing on this historic success of getting people together, what do you believe is the most realistic, best-case outcome from the high-level meeting on pandemic prevention?
Well, I'm hoping for an outcome which has a very clear call to action for strong and accountable political leadership, meaningful and concrete commitments to equity, meaningful and concrete commitment to multisectorality, including the engagement of civil society and communities. Those are the ingredients of the success to HIV, which I think must be replicated. We can't have business as usual. That needs to be replicated and really built on in the meeting on PPR and its outcome document.
What specific steps are needed to get there? What needs to happen after the pledges and speeches are delivered this month?
I think, after the dust settles, we look at the commitments that have been made and we look at how we do things differently to deliver on those commitments, how we work together. It has to be about stronger and more concrete collaboration. It has to be about doing things differently. And it has to be about, I think, a genuine and respectful engagement and commitment to equity. Otherwise, we will not make progress.
And also holding partners accountable.
Holding, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Very important point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What ties the pandemic meeting to the other two major summits on tuberculosis and universal health coverage?
So for me, the golden thread that runs through pandemics, TB, and UHC, there's several. So one is around equity. Without equity, you can't achieve progress on either of the three. The other is around multisectorality. We have seen in health time and time again that the factors that affect health, many of those are outside the health sector. So we need to engage multisectorally. So equity, multisectorality are the golden threads that run through. And then health systems. Without an active, well-invested in, strong health system, with a well-equipped health force, with a modern, you know, with all the modern tools at its disposal, we will not be able to achieve progress in all three. And there's two things I want to focus on. One is on science. Science is doing extraordinary things. How do we make that science universally available and accessible? That's a human rights commitment of the United Nations. And that's something we need to be doing much more, we need to be thinking much more about, is how do we get that science out to everybody? Secondly is the issue around digital and digitalization. And I think, you know, we saw this incredible acceleration of the use of digital tools during COVID, for better or for worse. And I think we've learned a lot. We need to continue on, you know, digitalizing health systems. You know, for example, in India, UNDP had been investing for many years with the Indian government in digitizing routine immunization. And we were able to help the government pivot very quickly to COVID vaccination. And there was over 1 billion vaccines delivered in an incredibly short period of time in the COVID response. So I think we need to those kinds of scaling up initiatives around digital and digital health. But I think what is critical is that we safeguard privacy, confidentiality, and human rights. And that's going to be really important. Also really looking at the misinformation, disinformation elements of the, you know, of digitization, making sure that we are putting correct information out there. We're verifying. We've got some exciting initiatives at the United Nations on that, you know, we're validating and verifying, making sure that there's accurate information. And then the third piece for me is AI. I think we need to really, you know, the actual developers and the godfathers of AI are saying we need to get the guardrails right and now. And so I think that's another thing that we need to absolutely get right if we're going to make progress across all three of these. Equity of access to technologies and tools is really important, not just the digital, but also the basic, the medicines, the diagnostics. There have been two really exciting announcements in the last week or two with the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, TB, and Malaria brokering a deal to dramatically reduce the cost of HIV treatment. This means millions more will be able to be put on treatment, which is fantastic. Similarly, with an MDR TB medicine. So I think those kinds of, we need to have more of those kinds of innovations and deals to be able to make progress on all three. Mm-hmm. It can be done. You know, HIV treatment used to be $10,000 per patient per year when it started. We're down to $45 per patient per year. That's extraordinary. So we need more of those kinds of things to happen if we're going to make progress across all three.
Absolutely. In addition to the health summits, there are obviously many other events happening during the General Assembly that go beyond the scope of global health. What role will health play in the broader discussions happening this September at the UNGA?
Well, I hope that health is going to be central to the SDG summit. I hope it's going to be central to the climate meeting, to the financing meeting, and I hope that it's going to be carried through to COP28. Without addressing health across all of these meetings, we will not be able to make progress. You know, it's hard to imagine how you have, you know, thriving economies without healthy people. How you have, you know, how you're going to have an energy transition without healthy people. So I think it's really important that we continue to see health as both an outcome and a driver of sustainable development, and to really deliver on the climate promise for the world and for this generation and for the next.